You ever stare at that search bar, type something in, and then boom, there's this perfect answer. Almost like magic. Google, ChatGPT, bing, Perplexity. They all do it. But what's actually going on behind the scenes? Like, how do they find that stuff and whip up an answer so fast? It's not just plain old search anymore, is it? And really understanding this, well, for you, whether you make content or you're prepping for a meeting or you're just curious, knowing this stuff is like getting a superpower.
That's a great way to put it. And what's really fascinating is that while these AI systems might seem similar on the surface, their actual engines, the architectures, they can be pretty different. And figuring out those differences, well, it's not just some academic exercise. It's genuinely the key to making sure your content actually gets seen, that it makes an impact in this generative AI world. So our mission today really is to peek behind the curtain at the big ones: Google's AI Overviews and AI Mode, ChatGPT, Bing Copilot, and Perplexity AI. We want you to get their sort of internal logic.
I like that, your first superpower. Okay, so what's this deep dive really mean for you listening right now? It means learning the language these AI systems understand. We're gonna dig into how they retrieve information, how they index it, how they synthesize answers, and hopefully give you some clear, actionable things you can use. You should walk away understanding, how to make your content actually count. Okay, let's unpack this then. So you've got amazing content, right? You want it to show up. But here's the thing. Most AI models can be, well, a bit forgetful, or maybe their info isn't totally up to date. That's where this really clever idea comes in retrieval augmented generation, or ARRI. Sounds kind of technical, I know, but it's pretty brilliant. Can you break down what problem ARRI is actually solving and like how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. Think of it like this. These large language models, LLMs, they're amazing at, say, telling stories, but sometimes they kind of invent facts hallucinations, right? Or their knowledge just stops at a certain date. R tackles this. It basically gives the LLM an open book test, but in real time. So instead of just using its stored memory, ARRI connects the answer back to fresh external information.
Ah, okay. So it's like giving the AI a fact checker right when it needs it.
Exactly. Yeah. A fact checker on steroids, maybe. The process itself is pretty neat. First, your query, what you type in, gets turned into something called an embedding vector. Imagine translating your question into a really precise set of numbers that captures its meaning. Not just the keywords, but the actual intent behind them. Then the system uses that vector to search this huge library of pre-calculated content embeddings. These could be from web pages, videos, documents, all sorts of things. It's looking for content that matches the meaning of your query.
Right, so it's finding stuff that conceptually aligns, even if the words aren't exactly the same.
Precisely. Then those initial results, the candidates, they go through another step called re-ranking. This uses a smarter model to score them again, looking for even better relevance. And finally, the very top-ranked pieces of content are fed to the LLM. That's the grounding context. It gives the AI the specific facts it needs to create a fluent and hopefully accurate answer.
Wow. Okay. So the old saying, content is king. Maybe it's shifting now to content is fuel for this like just-in-time reasoning engine, which means for your content to even be considered, it has to be, one, retrievable. It needs strong semantic signals, good metadata, right? And two, it needs to be digestible for that final step, the synthesis. So clear structure, easy to pull out facts. If it doesn't have that, it's basically invisible to the AI. That's a huge shift.
It really is. You have to think beyond just humans reading it. It needs to be processable factually by a machine on demand.
Okay, you mentioned embeddings and this huge library of them. That sounds really different from how traditional search engines work, for years and years. How does this embedding-based indexing actually change how content gets found compared to, say, just matching keywords?
Oh, it's a massive change, a seismic shift, really. Traditional search, relied heavily on what's called an inverted index.
Yeah.
Think of it like a giant phone book for words on the internet. It lists every word and points to the pages containing it. Great for keywords, but now we're talking about vector databases. Here, every document, or even just chunks of a document, gets represented by these dense vectors, long strings of numbers that capture the meaning, the semantics in this high-dimensional space.
High-dimensional space.
Okay.
So it's not just about word matching anymore. It's about matching the sort of vibe, the concept of what someone's looking for.
Exactly. That's the power of it. It lets the system find content that's semantically related, conceptually similar, even if the exact keywords from your query aren't anywhere in the text. It's about the ideas.
Yeah.
And it gets even more interesting because this indexing is often multimodal.
Multimodal meaning.
Meaning it can handle different types of content, text, images, audio clips, data tables.
Yeah.
They can all be turned into embeddings, separately, but then linked together under one main document ID. So an image or a diagram from your website could actually be pulled out as direct evidence for an answer, even if the text around it wasn't the main reason the page was chosen.
Okay, hold on. So if I'm trying to optimize for this generative engine optimization, GEO, it sounds like just stuffing keywords is way less important now. It's more about weaving this rich semantic fabric into my content. Can you give an example of that?
Absolutely. For GEO, you really need to optimize for semantic coverage. Use natural language, express concepts clearly. For images, don't skip the alt text, and captions make them descriptive because they become their own searchable embeddings. And for things like videos or podcasts, you need good, accurate transcriptions, detailed metadata. You basically want every part of your content to resonate with meaning, speaking that conceptual language the AI understands.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Okay, but here's a question then. If these embeddings are so powerful, why do most AI search platforms still use what you called hybrid retrieval? Why not just go all in on the semantic meaning-based search?
That's a really sharp question. And the answer is, well, it's about getting the best of both approaches. Lexical search, the traditional keyword-based stuff, like an algorithm called BM25, it's still really, really good at precision for exact matches. Think rare terms, specific product codes, unique names. If you need that exact thing, lexical search is often faster and more accurate.
Okay, so that's like the librarian finding the exact book title.
Right. Whereas semantic retrieval, using embeddings, excelled at recall, it's great at finding conceptually related content, stuff that talks about the same idea, even using different words. It casts a wider net. Meaning-wise.
So they're like two different specialists on the search team. One's precise, the other finds related ideas.
Exactly. So a hybrid system often runs both searches in parallel. It does a lexical search and a semantic search, often called a nearest neighbor search in that vector space. Then it combines the results from both, figures out how to compare their scores, maybe normalizes them, and then pushes that combined list through a final re-ranker. This re-ranker looks at context and tries to pick the absolute best results from the merged pool. It ensures you get both the benefit of exact matches and the broader conceptual relevance.
Okay, that's a crucial point for anyone creating anything online. You can't just ditch classic SEO, right? Keyword optimization still matters for getting found by that lexical part. But then the semantic optimization, the meaning, determines if you show up in the embedding index and how relevant you seem conceptually. It's not either. It's both. You need both.
You absolutely need to compete in both lanes now.
All right, let's get into the specific platforms then. Starting with the giant, Google. How are their AI overviews and the AI mode connecting with, well, all that search history and infrastructure they have? It's massive.
Yeah, Google's approach is, as you'd expect, deeply integrated. Their AI features are built on their custom Gemini models, but those models work directly with their decades of mature search technology. A key concept here is what they call the query fanout.
Query fanout sounds like it's sending out a whole search party.
Chuckles.
It kind of is. Your simple query, what you type in, it basically explodes into multiple hidden subqueries. Each one targets a different potential angle or intent behind your original question. So if you search for, say, best half marathon training plan, Google might secretly also search for 12-week schedule. Running tips for beginners, half marathon nutrition, tapering strategy. You get the idea.
Whoa. So it's not just one search. It's like a dozen searches happening all at once, trying to anticipate everything I might really want to know. I can almost hear it thinking, you asked about training plans, but I bet you also need shoe advice.
That's the core idea. And these subqueries run across all sorts of Google data sources, simultaneously the main web index, of course, but also the knowledge graph, YouTube transcripts, Google Shopping, specialized indexes. Then all those results get pulled together, duplicates removed, everything ranked, and then the best stuff is fed into the Gemini LLM to synthesize the answer. The AI overviews you see at the top of results are the concise version with citations. AI mode is the more conversational back and forth version that can even go fetch more info if needed during the chat.
That's incredibly complex, but okay, translating that to GEO, to optimizing our content, it means we really need to think about multi-intent retrieval. Does our content answer not just the main question, but the related ones too? And you mentioned snippet extractability earlier. That sounds critical here too. Writing clean, self-contained paragraphs that Google can easily lift, plus all the usual authority signals, EEAT expertise, experience, authoritativeness, trustworthiness.
That's precisely it. You need to anticipate those hidden subqueries. Think about the whole journey someone is on when they ask that initial question.
Okay, now switching gears completely, ChatGPT. Lots of us use it, right? But it plays a totally different game because it doesn't have its own web index like Google. How does that affect whether our content gets seen?
Right. ChatGPT is different. Its base models, the ones it's trained on, have a knowledge cutoff date. So when it needs current info or info outside its training data, it acts more like an opportunistic browser. It essentially uses other search engines' APIs, often Bing's, maybe Google's too, to find relevant URLs in real time.
So wait, it doesn't search the web itself. It asks other search engines for links.
In many cases, yes, for its browsing mode. Mm. It generates search queries based on your prompt, sends those queries to an API, gets back a list of promising URLs, and then it fetches the actual content from a few of those URLs right then and there to use for its answer.
Okay, so it's doing this little live search and fetch operation on demand.
Exactly. And what that means for content visibility is that everything hinges on real-time retrievability. If your website blocks crawlers with robots.txt, if it loads slowly, if it relies heavily on JavaScript to show content, client-side rendering, or if the text is just hard to parse, ChatGPT's browser might just skip it. It won't be able to grab the content quickly enough to use it.
So for ChatGPT with browsing enabled, it really comes down to hardcore technical SEO fundamentals. Your pages need to be easily crawlable, super fast, lightweight, and the text needs to be clear and immediately available in the HTML source. Speed and accessibility are just paramount, maybe more than anything else.
If your page isn't ready to be grabbed and parsed instantly, it's effectively invisible in that moment.
Okay. Now, Bing Copilot. This one feels like maybe a mix, kind of like a traditional search engine that put on a generative AI coat. How does it balance that classic SEO world with these new generative answers?
That's a good analogy. Bing Copilot is definitely unique because it directly leverages Microsoft's entire existing Bing search and ranking infrastructure. This is huge. It means all those traditional SEO signals, relevance, authority, links, user engagement, they matter a lot because they determine what content even gets considered for the AI part. Only after that initial ranking does the GPT class synthesis layer come into play.
Got it. So it's very much search engine first, and the AI builds on top of that rank list rather than replacing it entirely.
Largely, yes. Bing describes a flow with roughly 5 stages. It starts with query understanding, then does hybrid retrieval, then contextual re-ranking and passage extraction, then the LLM grounding and synthesis, and finally presentation with citations and, interestingly, actions. Unlike Google's wide fan-out, Bing's approach seems a bit more focused or maybe opinionated early on. It uses its mature ranking signals to kind of narrow down the possibilities before getting too deep into generation.
And the hybrid retrieval, that's the mix of keyword search and the meaning-based vector search again.
Yes, it employs a true hybrid model, pulling from both its traditional index, using BM25-like methods, and its vector index. This gets at that balance. And because it's built on Bing's index, which is already filtered for quality to some extent, good classic SEO hygiene, making sure your site is crawlable, using canonical tags correctly, having clean HTML, being fast, pays off significantly here. After retrieval, there's a crucial re-ranking step using a cross-encoder. This looks very closely at passage-level relevance. And it specifically filters for extractability. Are there clear, concise chunks, like lists or tables? And authority, using site and author trust signals.
Okay, this is super actionable for Bing Copilot then. It sounds like the strategy is classic SEO plus chunk engineering. You need to nail the fundamentals for both keyword and semantic relevance. Then structure your pages specifically for easy extraction, short paragraphs, maybe definition blocks, bullet points, small tables, and keep building those entity signals with schema, showing author expertise, and maybe optimizing for what happens after the answer, like providing downloadable data.
Exactly. Think, how can my content provide not just an answer, but a useful, liftable piece of information? And that connection to Microsoft 365 actions, like exporting to Word or sharing in Teams, that's a unique angle for Bing too.
Now, Perplexity AI, this one really stands out because it's so transparent, right? It often shows you the sources before it even gives you the answer. Why is that transparency such a big deal, and what does it reveal about how Perplexity works?
Perplexity's transparency is, well, it's the game changer for analysis. By showing its sources up front, it lets everyone see exactly which pages fed into a synthesized answer. This makes it not just a useful answer engine, but also this incredibly open sort of laboratory for people like us studying generative engine optimization. In fact, that term GEO really gained traction from people experimenting on Perplexity precisely because you could see the cause and effect so clearly.
That's fascinating. So it's like a live experiment running constantly, showing us what kind of content gets picked and cited.
Pretty much. Perplexity does real-time searches, often hitting both Google and Bing indexes. evaluates the potential source pages based on relevance, both keyword and semantic, perceived authority, and crucially, how easily it can extract a direct answer. And through observing it, we've noticed some key ranking factors seem to be weighted quite heavily.
Like formatting for direct answers.
Exactly. Perplexity seems to strongly favor pages that basically restate the query, maybe in a heading like an H2 or H3, and then immediately follow it with a very concise, information-packed answer. It's almost like optimizing for a super-featured snippet. Entity prominence is another big one. It likes passages where key people, places, things are clearly identified and linked, maybe using schema.org markup or just clear contextual descriptions. Authority signals matter too, but it looks beyond just links, things like author bios, credentials shown on the page, even being cited alongside other reputable sources.
And you mentioned visuals earlier, that inline images correlating with citation.
Yes, we've seen that too. For technical topics, for instance, a page with a clear, well-labeled diagram often gets cited over a text-only page, assuming the text is comparable. It also seems to reward pages that cover a topic comprehensively, hitting multiple facets of a query but without getting, you know, rambling or diluted. Semantic breadth but focused.
Okay, so the strategy for Perplexity feels like you need to treat your pages almost as modular answer units. Align the structure, question in the heading, direct answer right below, build up entity context with schema and clear writing, layer the information, sharp answer first, then explanation, then supporting details like diagrams, and showcase trust signals explicitly author bios, credentials.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And because it's transparent, you can actually test things.
Mm-hmm.
Try different structures, different entity mentions, different visuals, and see what gets cited using Perplexity itself. Then you can take those learnings to optimize for the less transparent systems. Perplexity might just be the most measurable AI search engine right now. It's like a proving ground. If you can optimize for Perplexity, you're likely building content that's well-suited for the whole next generation of search.
Wow, okay. This has been such a deep dive. We've really torn down these different platforms, seen their unique approaches. But pulling it all back together, what's the common thread? Are there universal rules for getting your content seen in this new AI search world?
There definitely is a common thread, a sequence almost. First, retrievability. That's the absolute baseline. If the system can't find your content, nothing else matters. That's the price of admission. Second, extractability. Once found, can the system easily pull out the relevant facts or passages it needs to ground its answer? That's like your ticket to being used in the synthesis. And third, trust signals. Especially for more critical queries, does your content project authority and reliability? That often seals the deal for getting explicitly cited. So, retrievability, extractability, trust. That sequence seems universal. But, and this is key, how much weight each platform puts on each stage and how they achieve it, that varies quite a bit.
Right. So just to quickly recap that weighting difference. Google's AI overviews and AI modes seem to really value breadth, covering those latent intents revealed by the query fanout. Bing Copilot feels the most traditionally SEO-driven. You need solid retrieval across both keywords and semantics, plus those tightly scoped, extractable passages. Perplexity AI is all about that real-time speed, clean structure, and writing concise, answer-first content, and ChatGPT with browsing. That's pure opportunism. Content needs to be instantly available, technically perfect, and semantically super clear to match the user's phrasing right then and there.
That's a perfect summary. Understanding those different weights, those specific platform levers, that's where the real optimization strategy comes in.
This has been just fascinating, really getting into the weeds of how AI search works. It absolutely feels like the entire landscape is shifting under our feet. So, thinking big picture now, what's the one major takeaway we should all be mulling over as we move forward?
Well, if there's one single theme that cuts across every single architecture we talked about, it's this. The system's first step is never just taking your query at face value. Whether it's Google's fanout, Bing's hybrid lanes, Perplexity's reformulations, or ChatGPT generating its own search prompts. They all fundamentally transform what you initially typed. They turn it into a whole set of related queries aimed at uncovering your deeper latent intent. And that, I think, raises a really profound question for anyone creating content or trying to be visible. Can you position yourself not just to answer a single keyword, but to satisfy an entire intent space?
Wow. An entire intent space. That's definitely something to think about. What an incredible journey through AI search today. We've seen just how complex these systems are, but honestly also how empowering it is to start understanding how they actually work. Hopefully you now have a much clearer, more practical idea of what makes content actually show up and get used in these generative environments.
Yeah, hopefully this deep dive gives you the concepts and the tools to not just, you know, react to AI search, but to actively strategize and optimize for it, to really engage with where information discovery is heading. So keep asking questions, keep digging, because the more you understand these systems, the more effective you can be.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, keep learning and keep exploring.